So, hi and welcome to episode 50 of channel Modiga Människor, and today even Brave People. This is actually the first one in English, and today I have the honor to have Runi Rogers with me. She's a microbiologist and scientist, and she has over 30 years of experience. So now I is it okay for you to introduce yourself?
Yeah, it's seeing that I've got 30 years experience, that means that I'm actually retired now. I can't go out and talk because I haven't got a job to lose anymore. I have worked in private industry, pharmaceutical companies and other research industries all my life. So I haven't got publications out in the open. You know, you can't really publish business secrets openly. I have had talks and posters on at conferences, but I haven't got any published. That there has been a point that people have raised before that they can't find me in the open, sort of in journals, medical journals and things like that. But that is because I worked in industry, so I haven't been able to publish openly. But I've been working with microbiology, as you said, the viruses for bacteria. You worked with the cancer research and with also implying viruses, HPV viruses. So, yes.
Yeah, you have a lot of experience. Yeah. And I've been listening to you. You've been in some podcasts in Norway, and I've been listening to it, and I think you're a lot more outspoken than other people I hear. I mean, very, very brave. You actually say what you like to say.
Yeah, that comes with age, I think, also.
I guess so. And should we just go into the subjects? One of them is this injections that we talked about to discuss, and young children and what's actually happening now.
Well, now as this progresses more and more, they've got much further with this in other parts of the world than they have here in Norway anyway. They're in America especially, they inject smaller children as well, and in other countries. And as this progresses and the data come out, it turns out that for young children who don't actually have about zero chance of dying of this disease or even getting sick, they get a lot of problems. What is now official is that they get, especially young men, can get myocarditis and pericarditis, so that is afflictions of the heart. And some have even died from that, and some have been maimed for life, really, through heart problems. And another thing is that that is a condition that can turn out later in life to be quite seriously. We used to have, when I was little, we used to have a condition called a growing heart. And that is actually, my uncle actually died from that, but that is, of course, many years ago. And I hope they have some better treatments for it now. But there isn't much one can do about that. And if a myocarditis develops into that, then you may actually need a heart transplant at a later stage. So the heart problem is quite a serious one. And of course, there are other adverse effects that they have also found now as they have injected more and more young people and children. And I saw one article when they find that the problems are bigger than what that good it does, this injection. They get more problems. I saw also a statistics from the UK today. They found that of children who have died of COVID-19, of COVID, with nothing else, no underlying diseases or anything like that, there was two in a million. So that is, I don't know what that is in percent, 0.000 something. And even in those cases, they're not sure that there weren't any underlying diseases, because the children who have actually succumbed, they turn out to have quite serious underlying conditions. They don't die of the COVID, but they die with the COVID sometimes. But the children and the young people, they there is no reason to inject them. And also, if one let young people just get a little bit sick, most of them just get a little bit sick or not at all, then they would get immunity, and in time the whole problem would actually go away because the population would be immune. But yeah, that would be a problem of solving the whole whole pandemic.
Yeah, but this is also one of the new thing that, I mean, this
herd immunity.
Now
it's the best striving for the herd immunity. Yeah. And then I think that if people get this jab or this injection, then they get immune and you achieve herd immunity in that way. But now it turns out you don't, because most people with COVID-19 infections in hospital at the moment in different countries, Israel mainly, who are the country that has injected most people, the majority of the people in hospital are already vaccinated. So the protection is, you don't get the herd immunity this way, apparently.
No, but not so long ago, everybody knew that it was good to have a natural herd immunity.
Yeah. But today, and immunologists say that natural immunity is much, much better. You have it probably lifelong immunity, and you have a much broader immunity because you have exposed to the whole virus, not just one little protein, but you've been exposed to the whole virus. So your immune system recognizes the whole, and the coronaviruses, they don't change a lot. They don't vary a lot. They're little conformities of the surface that can change a little bit. But it's much better to have an immunity for the whole virus than just a little bit of a protein. Gives a much better immunity.
Yeah.
And I also don't find it so strange why they inject people who have already had COVID-19 infections, because they are already immune. So why do they give them injections?
Yeah. And I also heard that the people who already have it get more sick from the second jab.
Yeah. And also the lady Simone Gold, who is the chairing the America's Frontline Doctors, she I saw an interview with her yesterday with Rainer Fulmich, and she said they see more and more in America, more and more indications that the people who really get sick with or get adverse reactions from the vaccine are people who already had the infection, and that is what has been predicted, that you get a violent reaction when you have already been sick and you get this, or what they have been worried about is that if you have had these injections and you get exposed to a similar virus, your immune system will overreact and you get what they call a cytokine storm, and they reckon that what you see here with people who were already immune and then get the injections, that their immune system overreacts and you get more adverse reactions.
Oh, I don't know what to say.
And this never happened before, that one injects or vaccinates people who are already immune. That is something completely new. That didn't have never done that before. I mean, a child who had measles, you don't go and inject them with vaccine for measles. They already had it, they are already immune. It's a new strategy altogether.
But also the safety thinking. I mean, apparently it doesn't matter if how many cases there is with people who got sick from the jab. It feels like they don't care. I even heard a man on the news. I can't remember his name. I saved it, but I think it was like around 150 children who was injected. And he said, yeah, it was by mistake, but this is way much dangerous, this C-19. So get over it. It was just 150 kids. And he really says that in the television. I mean,
yeah, there are some attitudes that are impossible to understand. With the swine flu, when they saw what the vaccines were doing to people, I think there were about very few deaths, comparatively few deaths, and they stopped the vaccinations completely. And now there are thousands of deaths, and they just keep going. Mm. Official numbers from the United States, the last time I saw it was 5,000 something.
My God. Oh, this is...
Although that is, they say, oh, yeah, but that's a small percentage because we have injected so many people. So that is just a small percentage. But
And I even think of the numbers who are not counted into that. I mean, there must be a lot of people who doesn't...
Lots of dark, because they reckon that the systems that where people call in and inform about things, that is about a tenth of the actual numbers. And I see that here there are people who have adverse reactions, and I say, have you informed the Legemiddelverk in Norway? And they say, no, they haven't bothered.
And if we include this, we talked about this informed consent.
Yeah, that is another strange thing, because the informed consent was implemented after the Second World War, when the Nazis had been doing experiments on people, medical experiments, and it was accepted to be followed worldwide. And there's also now something called the Helsinki Declaration, which expands on that and says that you're not to have people involved in an experiment without giving them all relevant information about risks and possibilities and everything. And that is completely ignored in this case. This is an experiment. The Grade 3 study is only finished in January 2023. It isn't finished. It is still an experiment. And I don't know of anybody who has been given a form to sign where it says informed consent and you're given all the information. I know I've done studies, population studies myself, and I know how strict it was. We had to submit to authorities, and there were certain forms that had to be filled in and information, and it was very strict. And every person who was part of the experiment had to sign. I had to write out several pages long of information about what we were doing and the possible effects and things, and they had to sign that they were willing to be part of the experiment. And that is totally, totally ignored in this case. I know that people get a questionnaire about what diseases they have, what the health sort of health condition, and then they're vaccinated. There is no informed consent whatsoever, and that is illegal. It is a crime to not follow that. To follow that those rules, the Nuremberg Code and the Helsinki Declaration.
Mm. And people are not aware of this.
No, I suppose you don't know about it if you haven't been doing population studies. You don't really. It's in that setting that you become aware of it, I suppose. And nobody's told. But the people who are actually running the show, they know about it.
Yeah. But what can we do? What can we do? I mean, obviously this is illegal what they are doing, but
well, my purpose with this whole the podcast that I made is to inform people. Because, I mean, we have free will. And if somebody says, I'm not willing to take a chance on being sick, okay, that's their choice, as long as they know on which that they have a basis on making mm-hmm. that choice. Mm-hmm. And when they're not informed, they have no basis of on which they make the choice. They go along with the narrative or the propaganda that comes through the media, and that is all they have to go on. And they trying to make people as scared as they possibly can. Mm-hmm. And so my whole purpose is to give people information. This is the case. You are supposed to be told, and this is what you are supposed to be told, that this is an experiment. Nobody knows the outcome of this experiment. Mm-hmm. And it could be this, that the studies show that this and this and this can happen. And you must sign to make sure that this is all in order and you're willing to do it. And that is my whole point, that people make an informed choice.
Hmm. Oh yeah.
Yeah. So I mean, I fully respect people who say, yes, I know about all that. But I just want to maybe say, feel that better safe than sorry, and I want to have this vaccine anyway. That is fine, as long as I know people who say that. They said, yes, I hear what you say, but I still want to do this. And that's fine, as long as they know.
Yeah, but I know a lot of people who actually had a stomach ache before they did it and felt it wasn't okay, but they felt they needed to because of the pressure.
There's a lot of pressure, a lot of pressure. I know people who have been really heavily pressurized by their children. Mm. I mean, grown-up children who say to their parents, you are sort of old and you're in a in a risk group, so you have to do it. And after I have preached for a long time, they have actually made up their mind not to get it, and then I get pressured into doing it anyway. And I know a lot of people who get pressured. Yeah,
I heard actually the kids to someone older says you can't meet your grandchildren if you're not.
Yeah.
Mm.
So.
It's a scary time, actually.
It is a very scary time. And when you also think that I saw statistics the other day in Norway. There are about 5% of the population who've actually not only been sick, but have had a positive test then, although we must talk about the tests. But anyway, 5% out of 5.1 million people. Mm. Not a lot.
No.
And influenza has totally gone away, completely disappeared. Not a single person has had influenza the last two winters.
Mm. Yeah, but it's also a lot of other diseases. I mean, not so long ago, a lot of people talked about cancer, and they had friends who had cancer, and now no one speaks about that. I mean...
unfortunate thing is also when they were expecting all this surge of dying people, of the dying of COVID-19, they cleared bases and things so that, for instance, cancer patients and other people with serious conditions just had to wait.
Mm.
And the wards were never filled up. That never happened. Mm. And that was all based on some computer model by some person in England that has been wrong so many times, and they still listen to him and go according to what he says.
Mm. So now I think we come into this PCR tests.
Mm. The PCR test was already from the person who invented it. They said clearly that it's not suitable for diagnosing the disease at all. That is mainly used in research. It is to detect tiny little pieces of DNA in the material, and you run it in cycles. You have to sort of repeat the process to amplify the number of pieces of DNA. You sort of have something. It's a bit difficult, but it's a what's called a primer. That is the known sequence, that the known gene that you're looking for. And then that is supposed to bind. If there's another piece in that material that has the same sequence or same genes, it's supposed to bind to that. And then you can amplify those two pieces that have sort of coupled up so that you can detect them in a certain method, laboratory method. And normally one uses what one calls 25 to 30 cycles, and that you sort of run it 25 to 30 times to make sure that you have got enough amplifications to detect if it is there in the material. Now, see, WHO in the beginning went out and said you must run 45 cycles. Now, if you run 45 cycles, you'll pick up just about anything. I don't know if it's true, but there was a report from Africa. Somebody had picked up something in a mango and in a goat and everything, because this is just a tiny piece. And it can, you know, even if you have no disease, if you have had a little bit of a virus that is the same, it will pick that up. If you run it so many times, it will come out. This is a bit inaccurately explained, but the problem is that with 45 cycles, you pick up a lot of what we call false positives. They come out as positive results, although they haven't actually got the COVID-19 piece that they're looking for there. So they reckon that of the healthy people that have a PCR test coming out positive, 80 to 90% are false positives. Hmm. And so we have a pandemic of false positives. Hmm. And the WHO, after that, they went back and they said, no, listen, you mustn't run it 45 cycles. You must stop it. I think it was 30. But somehow that never penetrated to the labs, at least not here. So they still have been running them at 45. I think maybe they moderated it now, but for at least a year and a half, they were running 45 cycles and picking up Tom, Dick, and Harry. Mm.
But you have some news about...
Yes, I had actually seen it a long time ago, and I couldn't find it until it surfaced today. There was a table, and I'll send the link as well, which shows that Norway, amongst other countries, but Norway bought PCR test kits for COVID-19 in 2017. Hmm. I don't know how they knew in 2017 that in 2020 they were going to need the kits, but one can speculate. Hmm. Somebody knew something, because there were lots. They bought in lots and lots of PCR kits for COVID-19. It specifies that it is for COVID-19, and we have always been told that COVID-19 only surfaced in 2019, at the end of 2019, in China. So there's something very fishy. It's something that isn't right here.
But you said also something about that they are going to stop use the PCR tests.
Yeah, the PCR test, as a CDC sent out a notice just the other day. I saw it yesterday, but it could have been a day before, that they are now going to stop. At the end of the year, there will be no more PCR test as it is now used for diagnosing disease. That is now being halted. And I didn't see that said the explanation, but the explanation is obvious that it isn't a test. It doesn't give a result for whether you're sick with COVID-19 or not. It is really a hoax in a way. And I suppose that maybe that knowledge has come out so much now that they find that they must stop it. I don't know. So from the end of the year, there won't be any more of these PCR tests that they're doing now. Won't be done. When it comes to testing, there is, of course, antibody tests to see if you got antibodies against COVID-19, which takes a while to build up in your body from when you get infected. But I saw Simone Gold advocating in America now that the judges must rule that if they're going to inject people, they must first check for antibodies because of that reaction that I mentioned, the overreaction of the immune system. If you already have antibodies and you inject somebody, you get so they are now going to try and get the ruling that people must first be tested, not PCR test, but an antibody test to see if they've got antibodies in the body before they give them any injection. So it will be interesting to see if they manage to get that through, because that totally makes sense.
I actually have a question about the blodproppar. I don't know the English word.
Blood clots or thrombosis, yes. That was an unpublished paper, and I haven't seen if it has been published yet by Professor Bachti in Germany, who tested some patients in his in his office. There's something called a D-dimer test, which is the standard test for checking on blood clots. If you have some sort of symptom that you may have a blood clot in your body, they do a D-dimer test, which is they just prick you in the finger or take blood anyway and check. And then they can find where the blood clot is, or if it's a big or a small one or anything, but they just find that there is a blood clot somewhere in your body. And he did D-dimer tests on his patients, selected patients, and did a D-dimer test before and after they had been injected. And he found that 60% of them had blood clots in their system. Probably just small ones, microscopic ones, but what he says the problem is that these little ones, they travel to the capillaries, for instance, in the lungs. The capillaries of the lungs are getting then clogged up, and you get a terribly high blood pressure in your sort of lung blood pressure because some of the little blood vessels get clogged up. And there's also another Canadian doctor who's done the same thing in his office. Or in his practice, he has with people come and complain after they had the injection. He does a D-dimer test on them, and he finds exactly the same, that 2 out of 3 have blood clots in the system. So the chances of getting blood clots if you go for this injection are way too high, in my opinion. And of course, you don't know where they, as I said, these blood clots may be very, very small, but you don't know where they travel to in your body. And even if they're small, they can do tremendous damage. I haven't seen if these papers have been officially published yet, but they are reported. Studies that have been reported, yeah.
But I guess this goes with small children and young teenagers as well then?
Well, the mechanism behind it should be exactly the same, whether the age of the person. I can't say for sure, but I can't understand why age should make a difference, because this has got to do with the interaction of the pig protein, the spike protein, with the blood cells. So I saw, and then that is also a sort of not published thing. I saw a picture of a smear, blood smear of an unvaccinated and a vaccinated person, and it looked very, very different. And the blood cells were really sort of clumped together in the vaccinated one. And Dr. Bhakti's explanation is that when you get this injection, the mRNA goes into your cell and starts producing your cell, or the mRNA inside your cell starts producing the spike protein. And the whole idea is that that spike protein is then migrates to the surface of the cell, and your immune system is supposed to see that spike protein and react to it. It does that, and when it migrates also to the, of course, to the what they call epithelial cells that line the blood vessels. And I reckon that could be the reason for the blood clots, that they get stuck, the blood vessels get stuck on the spike protein that is presented on the cells that line the blood vessels. But that is a theory as an explanation for what they observe in the patients.
We also have pregnant woman, and the thing I read about this injection that you might not even will be able to get pregnant.
Yeah, that I haven't seen any sort of revised studies on that particular thing, but I saw a report of a study where they had given injections to pregnant women. And they said that none of them lost, sort of there were no abortions between week 20, before week 22. But when the people reported it and I looked at it too, it appeared that they had only given injection to most of them. No, that is not right. There was a small percentage that had lost the baby before week 22. And when you looked at it, they had given most of them the injection when they're in week 31. And then you are near the end of your pregnancy anyway. When you looked at the numbers who had been given the injection before week 22, 80% of them had lost the babies. So you can always manipulate the way you do a study, yeah. and the way you sort of look at the results afterwards and so. But when I looked at the number, and that was a fairly small number, it was. But of the people who had been injected before week 22, 80% had abortions. So, but I and of course when you look at the Pfizer study report, it says that they do not know about effect on pregnancies because that hasn't been checked. They haven't done anything, any studies looking at that. They don't know anything about fertility because they haven't looked at that either. What they did say that they had some mice that seemed to be not affected, fertility didn't seem to be affected by the jabs, but that hadn't been looked at in people. Of course, when you see that study, that the report that is the basis for this whole thing is that they didn't have old people in the study and they didn't have children or very young people in the study. So they didn't know anything about effect on old people, and they didn't know anything about effect on young people and children because they didn't have them included. Now they say that's done studied on children. Mm-hmm. And when you see all the adverse effects that the children have, it's difficult to understand how they could say that those studies were fine.
I think it's. I mean, I read about this and I know a lot about this, but it's when we actually sit here and talk about it, it makes me so sad. Mm. How we can how someone actually can do this to children, and especially, I mean, I can see like every week they start to, there is like a new place in Sweden where they can have this jab for pregnant women, and they are like, it's hallelujah.
Yeah.
Yeah,
that it is. I think that is so irresponsible when the producer says we don't know about this, what the effect could be, and they still go along and say no, this is fine. Not when not even Pfizer says that we can say that this is fine because we don't know.
No, it's in, now it brings me on this. You talked about a study in Japan. Which yeah. actually includes Pfizer.
That was had a Pfizer thing at the bottom of the report. So it was done in cooperation with them apparently, and that study has been really. There's been a lot of talk about that study on the net and things. There was this Canadian professor who also reported on it. And he was really harassed afterwards. He's been through hell. And, you know, this censorship is crazy. But anyway, they showed that the lipids that they wrap the mRNA in, they migrate through the body. The thought originally, as far as I've understood, is that this injection should mainly stay in the injection site in the muscle. And then activate the immune system from there. But what actually happens is that it does migrate by the bloodstream through the body. And what they saw was that these lipids, and then they confer that will also then be part of the mRNA, because that is wrapped in these lipids, although they didn't actually specify the mRNA, they specify the lipid nanomolecules. They collected in organs. They collected in the liver, in the heart, in the lungs, and also in the brain. But they also found them mainly in the ovaries. I saw the table, and the concentration was 10 times higher in the ovaries than in any other organs. But as I said, they specify it's the nanolipid particles that they have found, and but the mRNA is wrapped in these things, so it's difficult to see how they can sort of travel on their own, and that means that they will sit in the cells in these different organs and produce the spike protein if the mRNA is there. So, and that is why they also are worried that it could lead to infertility. Because they seem to, but that was in rats and mice, has obviously not been done in humans. But they did do one autopsy. I saw a report on one autopsy where they saw the mRNA was disseminated through the body, but that was a COVID positive patient. So it was difficult to say what it was, but it was definitely all over the body. The scary thing is that we don't know probably until a couple of years from now, maybe even longer, before we know what the effect of this is. The people who got the narcolepsy from the swine flu injections, They set a limit to 2 years, but there were people who reported getting sick after that as well. And then ME, the fatigue syndrome, that they say within 2 years, but the people who got sick after that. So it can take quite a long time before we get the full impact of this crazy thing. It's never ever happened before that people have been pressured into something that is so not tested properly, and for something that is so mild. I mean, a 0.5% mortality, including old people, because the mortality rate is much lower in younger people, obviously. But if you include the mortality of old people as well, worldwide, there's a mortality of 0.5%. I mean, that is no more than an ordinary flu. So, a lot of things here that are not quite right.
I want to ask you about the situation in Norway. I mean, you had a quite different situation compared to us.
Yeah, we had when this broke out in March 2020, there was a complete sort of lockdown of businesses and shops and everything. The only shops that were allowed to be open were the grocery stores and the chemists, and everything else was closed. And as people, if they could, must sit at home and work from home. That has sort of relaxed quite a bit. And a year ago in the summer, this is quite seasonal. So in the summer, it seems to, as a flu is seasonal. It's bad in the winter and it disappears in the summer. So that's what happened last year as well, and everything was open and fine. And then, of course, it started again in the autumn, and they clamped down again, but not as hard as the first time. So we were still able to do other shopping than just, but they closed the shopping centers, quite a lot of them. And of course, they wanted people to wear these ridiculous masks everywhere. And I saw people sitting alone in their car wearing a mask, or people walking out in the open air alone wearing a mask. I mean, but it's a little dog out there who wants to come inside. That was and all this sort of using sanitizers for your hands in all shops and all this sort of thing, and keeping the distance, and people queuing up outside shops because they could only have so many people inside at one time. That is all been loosened up here now. Now the summer is here and we are reasonably fine. But I foresee that they're going to start again when the weather changes and the cold comes back, that we will be back in the same place. Now they blame it on the Delta variant. And that has been shown. I saw a table over deaths of the different variants, and the Delta variant was on about a tenth scale, 10% of the others. It's not a very deadly thing at all, but apparently it's more contagious, but it's much kinder. Gives a much lighter infection, but now that is the big scare. So I reckon they will come up, because now they say the reason that people who are vaccinated get sick is because this is a Delta variant that the vaccine doesn't work for. That is the explanation for people getting sick, even though they have had the two injections.
On a personal level, have you been like protesting or anything?
My protest has really been mainly in my nearest circle of my children and grandchildren are not allowed to have any injections. And they are obedient, they want, or in the family. But I've tried with my friends but I find very little. A few of them have listened, but many haven't. I refuse to wear a mask. Wearing a mask for COVID is like putting up a fence with big holes to keep the mosquitoes out. I think a million viruses can march side by side through each of those pores in those masks. It's the craziest craziest notion that that has any effect, has no effect on virus whatsoever. So I refuse to go around looking like a monkey. I don't wear it, no matter what. So I don't take trains or buses at the moment. I use my car. But I haven't been on those demonstrations. We have demonstrations in Oslo, in front of the parliament often. And I haven't been there because it's sad with the in Norway that you get these super right-wing elements, you know, the sort of, not Nazis, but the sort of those, what are they called, these chaps that march through the streets with a swastika and things, they tend to come. And then the media, if they report on them at all, they focus on that, that these are just weirdos that come together. And if they then catch sight of somebody they know or somebody else and they film that, then you're really, oh yeah, you're in that crowd. And it's such a pity because I wish we could have it like they do in London and in Paris and where they really, the millions, or we couldn't have millions because we're not that many, but we could have a few thousand people coming together to protest. But it hasn't been like that, so I haven't, I want to be taken seriously. And I feel that if I join in that crowd, I may lose some of my credibility. So I haven't done that.
I can understand.
No, there was this huge demonstration all over the world yesterday. Not yesterday, on Saturday. And I know a whole lot of my, I'm in different groups on Facebook, not on Facebook, but on the net. A whole lot of groups with doctors and scientists and lawyers and things, and a whole lot of them were planning to go in on Saturday, but I believe that the turnout was a bit disappointing. I saw one of them writing that had hoped that there would be more people.
I was just thinking that we have the same thing in Sweden. I mean, as soon as you go out and protesting, there is a lot of you say the right wing influences, and even if there aren't, the media pick that up, and I see that from other places. I mean, there was something in Germany, a big thing, and they called it them Nazis, it's hard to do anything, have you been not able to go to a shop or anything because you
yes, there was one shop that they said you must have a mask, and I said then I won't shop here, then I'll find another one. So I mean, these shop assistants, they're just told what to do. They don't call the shots. They don't sort of make the decisions. And I realize it's not their fault. But that is the only time I've been in a sort of got into a shop and been told you can't be here without a mask. So then I said, well, then I won't buy anything. Yeah, I'll come back sometime when you stop this nonsense. people look at me. They do, and at the local grocery store, which is a big shop, and it's easy to keep your distance. So when the people were wearing masks, I made sure I kept my distance because it says in the rules here, it said, you know, either wear a mask or keep a meter or 2 meters distance. So then I keep the distance. And this man said sort of, oh, you were not wearing a mask. And he was the one who sort of came up on sort of close to me. So I said, well, I'm trying to keep my distance. And just so that you know, that mask has absolutely no effect on the virus anyway. So that's just, it has. So I said, no, that is scientifically proved. I've done lots of studies to show that they have no effect on virus. So there is, I don't wear a mask. I keep my distance. And then that's the only time anybody has ever said anything to me. So I have never worn one.
It makes me happy. I haven't worn one.
You haven't?
I haven't worn one either. Okay. I've been really protesting when people try to make me wear one. And now we have, I just want to talk about ivermectin as well.
Ivermectin, there are now, the last time I looked, there were 102 studies done, and they without fail show very good effect. If you start taking it when you get sick, you can take 3 days and you'll be fine. You're actually fine after 2 days, but you will take 3 days and you're fine. If you are a bit further into the process or into the disease, then you need to take it for 5 days. But then you're fine. And they have done also studies in hospitals, and people get better. And that is a very if there are other, there are lots of other medications one can use in the United States. They use quite a lot of monoclonal antibodies. I know that dihydroxychloroquine, which is a malaria medication, is also very effective, but that needs to be given early in the process. And there's also something called favipiridine, which is a Norwegian doctor, has been imported from Japan for many years for virus infections. That works very well. But when they discovered that it also worked on COVID-19, he was not allowed to import it anymore. It's not registered in Norway, but he has been allowed to take it in. But now, after that was shown to work on COVID-19, it was not allowed anymore. So he's got a store there still in Norway that he uses, but he's not able to import it anymore. But that's very effective as well. But I think when it comes to ivermectin, what sets that a little bit apart from the others, as far as the others that I've seen anyway, is that it has an effect all the whole way through. I mean, it doesn't matter if you got very sick and in hospital, and it still works. And what they've done in Norway now to stop, they haven't banned it, fortunately, like in America. They, for instance, they banned the hydroxychloroquine. They haven't banned it here, but they have turned up the price so much that people, you know, can't actually afford it, because you need to have at least 3 packets of 550 kroner each. So it is for one cure, to get yourself cured of COVID-19 quickly, you have to pay out 1,500, 1,600. So that is what they've done, but they just won't, they will not use it in the hospital or tell doctors to use it for their patients. They will not do that. And I keep saying that there aren't good enough studies, but there are now. I saw a meta-analysis of a lot of studies, very good studies, that have been done with ivermectin, and it really, really works and is very effective. So it's a pity. I mean, I reckon that most of the lives that have, most of the people who have died in the world could have been saved if they had been given ivermectin. And it's, I mean, it's old. It's been on the market for I don't know, 40 years or something. The chap who found it got the Nobel Prize for it, and it is for scabies, but it is well tried out when it comes to side effects. Very, very little, just about none. Very mild. It's a very, very safe product that could have been effectively used, that could have prevented hospitalization and crowding in the intensive care units. It could have saved lives. It could have saved all the lockdown. It could have made us have herd immunity and no more problems with the whole pandemic. But for some reason or other, the medical community have decided that that is not going to happen. And the thing is that they got this temporary approval for this product, the mRNA vaccine on the basis that there weren't any medication that could help. And I suppose if they were to admit, yes, there are medications that can help, I don't know if the approval would, that should have been withdrawn anyway.
Mm.
Because there is medication and lots of stuff that one can take, and that has had a good effect.
Mm.
So especially the ivermectin, that's a tragedy that they boycott that totally.
But in Norway, the doctor can actually subscribe it.
They can prescribe it. We've got it sort of in stock here because in case any of us should get sick, we have it in the fridge. But so most doctors won't prescribe it. My husband's doctor, he took one look at his, when my husband asked if he could have it for prevention, he took one look at his PC and went into the EMA, the European Medical Agency. Mm-hmm. And there it says, they say they don't advise using it for COVID-19. So the doctor says, here it says, I can't prescribe that for you. But a lot of doctors won't, but there are doctors in Norway who do and who see the point. And I found some that do, yeah.
Hmm.
Yeah.
But in Sweden, there is only...
It's not illegal for them to prescribe it here.
Okay, that's good. In Sweden, I think it's only veterinaries.
Yeah, veterinary use.
So a doctor.
Veterinary. So they don't use it for scabies in Sweden.
That's what I heard. I was talking to a doctor a few days ago, and I will do an interview with him on Thursday, actually, about this subject. And so they hope that they will be able to prescribe it.
Yeah. Because I have a friend who lives in Sweden, and she had asked the doctor about it, and she was told that it is only in a form of a cream. They don't have tablets, which could make sense if they use it for scabies, that would be a cream. But the producer makes tablets, so that is definitely possible to get.
Yeah, I think we kind of like got it all, but you're doing your part in this whole thing, but what can other do? I know a lot of people are actually scared to speak out, but
especially in the medical community, they're very scared. They're scared of losing their license.
Hmm.
And I know of several people who said, we asked, could you do a podcast? And I said, no, we don't want to take any chances on losing a license. There are some that are very brave. We have a group, an internet group with lots of doctors who are very brave. But most of them find it very difficult. And I think this isn't a medical thing. This is a political thing. And I know that at least in the politicians in Norway have gone against the medical authorities at several occasions. And so this is politics. And I think that if one can get access to politicians, that has been our approach now, that we're going to try and approach. And there are some politicians who have already sort of been quite outspoken and gone out and said what they think. And they get hell to pay for that. But they are the ones are quite adamant. And we've got a little group of politicians that we're going to now sort of join together and work on. And we're going for politicians now.
Yeah, and while we are on live here, I know that you spoke about this doctor who spoke about ivermectin to the Senate. And I'm trying to find this clip on internet. So if someone has this, because I heard other people talk about it, and I know that it affected you to listen to this doctor.
Yeah. And he was very convincing, and he didn't have all that many studies, but he had 11 studies that he presented, and they were done at all at three stages of the disease. Very convincing. And I can also try and see, you know, there's so much information pouring in all the time that it tends to drown a little bit, but I can try and do a search and see if I can find it as well. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But if I understand it right, they didn't really listen to him?
Well, the senators who were sitting there listening, they appeared to be listening to him. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't seem to have changed the politics or the policies of how they handle it all that much. But then on the other hand, we don't get much information here. We only get what the media want to show us. And that is mainly what Joe Biden says and the Democrats say. So we don't get a full picture.
No.
So it's difficult to know.
And your husband is not from Norway, so I guess you get some other information through him.
Yeah, well, he's from South Africa, and South Africa is really a third world country, become a third world country, and they are very much in a panic. Of course, the people there, the majority of the people there are very have a lot of sickness, lots of disease. They have they're poor, they have bad living conditions, and they succumb to this virus very easily. So it's quite a big scare. They have had now that, you know, over Christmas, and so there was summer, and they had it quite free. It was they had opened up the society and so, but now they're back into the winter, and they are in a new wave, as they call it again. So there's quite a lot of lockdown there now. So they are in a much worse situation than we are, because here the standard of living is high, and most of us are quite healthy. We have the opportunity of protecting ourselves and taking care of ourselves. But they can't have distance. They can't distance themselves. They are so crowded that they haven't got a chance. So you can't. It's difficult to compare. But they have a friend who's a nurse in one of the hospitals, and she says it's been pretty bad.
But I thank you so much for doing this interview. I always kind of want to end it with something hopeful.
On a bright note?
Yeah. I mean, it's so dark, some of the things we're talking about. But I really want to believe that there is a possibility for us actually to stand up and say no. And
yeah, I think more and more people are seeing that things don't add up here, that there's something not right. That is my impression, that there are more and more people who realize, even if they had the jabs or the injections, that they actually see that so I do think that there is a growing movement.
And I think so too. And thank you for being a part of it and actually educating me and us. I think it's fantastic. And I thank you for being so brave.
Okay. Thank you for having me.
So, okay. Thank you for watching this, and thank you so much, Rooney, and we keep in contact.
We will. Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye.